Opioid abatement money is on its way to the counties of the Upper Cumberland and to those all across the state. The question now, how will it be best spent? And can the counties of the Upper Cumberland work together to solve some common issues? For example, how do we get recovering addicts jobs that they need? How do we find them affordable housing from people who are willing to rent to them? In short, as more and more people find themselves at the mercy of addiction, we as a society can't simply put them in a box any longer and label them as addicts. We need them for jobs. We need them to raise their children. We need them as contributing members of society. We sit down with some very honest recovering addicts who tell their story. Shirley Bailey, Rob Frazier, Lindsay Holloway, and Will Roberts. What was the lowest point?
Mine was that day, September 28, 2010. I'd planned my suicide. My stepbrother had gone to get our drugs, and when he came home, I was just going to do them all and let my family think I accidentally overdosed and just remove myself and all the pain I was causing for them. But luckily, the local police had surrounded my house about an hour before that was fixing to happen and stopped that.
The first 31 years of my life was the lowest point for me.
Yeah.
You know, a life without a deep connection with God is a hopeless feeling. Mm-hmm. And what happened to me was I had been saved at about the age of 16, but I was still enslaved until I was 31. So I was in this process of the early phases of sanctification. And in that process, I was very resistant to the change that God had for me. Mm-hmm. I had an indifference and an intolerance towards spiritual principles. Although I had accepted Jesus, I didn't really know how to make him the Lord of my life. And, you know, I found a process in the program that we have, Life Recovery, whereby you go through these steps, and as you go through the steps, you wind up with a deeper, more intimate relationship with him day by day. Mm-hmm. And we do that through surrender and cleaning up our side of the street and, you know, carrying the message to others. And so it's an important process. And the great thing about it is it's like all Christian walks, we go through it over and over and over again. And as we go through that thing, we get a little bit closer to him every time. We reveal more of ourselves. There's things about us that we don't even know. There's things about us that have been hidden for so long, we begin to believe our lies. We begin to lose the ability to communicate with people. And over time, we get to the point to where when we hit bottom, we've hit so many bottoms, by that time, it's like just another day, you know. Mm-hmm. But April 18th, 1989, for me, was that day when after losing my, throwing my family away, my wife, my businesses, every good thing that ever happened to me, I was about done, and I was ready to make a change and really turn to him. And when I did that, he was right there waiting on me.
Shirley, the people that you pushed away, I'm curious, in the aftermath, in your recovery, did you hear the statement of, I knew it wasn't you.
Yeah.
I knew that wasn't you, and that's why, even though I wasn't willing to help you, I didn't leave you completely.
Yes, I heard that often, especially with people who love me. My mom would definitely be number one. My dad, he's passed away today, but they knew me. I didn't know me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who I was without having to put on some kind of face or front of performance. I did not know who I was. But mom and dad both, there were times in my addiction they would say, you're not my daughter. This is not, I don't know who you are, but this is not my daughter. And it wasn't me. I'm sure there's times that my daughter, Olivia, also thought that wasn't me. When I was in my program and she came out to live with me, I'd been there about 4 months, and she came out to California to finish my program with me. And I remember her snuggling with me in the bed, and she put her arm around me, and she goes, Mom, I can't feel your bones. You feel so good. And she was like, oh, Mom, I'm so happy. She was seven. And it really dawned on me right then that she had saw me so sick and so broken that in her little seven-year-old mind and world, she was really concerned just about my health. And so I think the people that loved me and knew me knew that that wasn't me.
She is Shirley Bailey. Rob Frazier is here. Lindsay Holloway with us. Will Roberts. We're talking about addiction. Our conversation continues as we talk with four people who have been through this and have come out the other side. Rob, are there people that you pushed away that have not come back?
There are. There are. So, for the most part, God has given me restoration, but also part of that, there's a double-edged sword to being accountable for our own actions. And a double-edged sword is that understanding that sometimes just because somebody's clean doesn't mean they are a healthy person to be around. There's different things we have to see. This has to be protected. This is an active process. It's like a bank account, not a trust fund. It can be taken away from, and you have to do something to replenish it. So I wouldn't say necessarily that these people didn't come back. It's just that I had to make choices on what I was going to pursue to keep this. And this walk in recovery is a series of hard decisions. And that's why we have to prepare them for this ultimate accountability, because we have to prepare you to manage this bank account, so to speak, this metaphorical bank account that you're going to make these withdrawals on. And if you don't take care of it, you're going to find yourself overdrawn pretty quick. And the consequences and ramifications of that is there's no three-month grace period. You're going to fall back into it. So that's why it's so important that we make these decisions. I may feel sick in the morning and don't feel like going to church. I go to church because I know that that is fundamental to staying in this process. Or I make this decision, I make that decision. So it was really an active process that I just decided not to pursue some of the individuals just in protection of what I have. But really, it's nothing against them. It's just an active decision.
Can I piggyback on that? All of us have learned at some level, if we don't exercise self-discipline, then discipline will be imposed upon us. Mm-hmm. So we find ourselves in a position where, as Rob said, the people that don't come back are a lot of times people that didn't need to be in our lives in the first place. So, but as we exercise self-discipline and really, really lock into God, then what he does is he reveals to us what we do need, what we don't need. This inventory process is something that we all have to go through, and we all recognize it to be probably the stalwart, the most substantial part of our recovery, is building that relationship with God and then figuring out where we're really supposed to be. There's an old saying in AA, it says that humility is an honest assessment of yourself. Well, you know, I thought for a long time that that was pretty good, but over time I realized that I can be honest with myself and be wrong, you know. So I've changed that. For me, humility is an accurate assessment of yourself. So if you can be accurate about your self-assessment, then you can build back the relationships that you need, and the ones that you don't need, God will take them away for a good reason.
He's Will Roberts. We're visiting with Will, Shirley Bailey, Rob Frazier, Lindsay Holloway. We're talking addiction. Will Roberts, Lindsay Holloway, Rob Frazier, Shirley Bailey are with us. We're talking about the issue of addiction. What's the stigma?
We have to get to a place to where what other people think about us is none of our business. You know, and the problem that we have in our communities now is that this stigma of addiction is, I happen to be on that task force, and I have to tell you that the stigma of addiction is a big lie.
Yep.
We are not what we were. You're not what you were yesterday. Mm-hmm. We all have to.
You're saying it's a lie from
the enemy to hold us back. You know, our testimony is what we have.
Gotcha.
It's a great thing. Now, what are we going to do with that? So, I have always heard you can't change your past, but you can change your past. I've added a day to my past yesterday that I don't have to be ashamed of. And the key is where does the stigma go then? The enemy can't use that against us anymore. And that's what we're all about. We have a lot of programs in the Upper Cumberland, but we need a lot of more programs. We need more consolidated programs. We need more continuity of care. We need more continuum of care. We need a lot of things. And as we go, then we're removing the stigma day in and day out. My wife's never seen me use drugs. She doesn't even know that guy. She told me, I don't even know that guy. I said, you don't want to know that guy.
Personally, when I got out of my program, the only places that would rent to me were places where a person in recovery didn't want to rent. And it was really hard with them looking at my felony for anyone in a nice neighborhood to let me rent there, which was a problem. I ended up renting on Murfreesboro Road in Nashville, which our entire apartment complex was drug dealers. Like, I could see them doing drug deals in the parking lot. There was two shootings in the parking lot. That is not conducive to somebody in recovery. And I had to live there until I got off of my federal probation. But, like, I would pull in and I would run straight up to my apartment. Like, I wouldn't, you know what I mean? And I couldn't have any friends in the neighborhood. I couldn't.
So you're isolated.
Isolated, which is not good in recovery. And then every time I would move to a new city, I would work my way up in my job position. But it didn't matter that the last couple of years I had had great jobs and I had worked my way up in each company. When I would move to a new city, they would start me off all the way at the bottom again. And then I would have to work my way up in positions and pay over and over and over again. I was a restaurant manager, you know, and then they ended up being the marketing director over all of the restaurants. Like, I worked my way up in every business, but then I moved back to Cookeville and it was like back to ground level floor entrance level positions, you know, and then moving my way up to a program director or whatever. But that stigma for other people, because we all know we're not those people. We all know we would never do any of those things now, but other people look at us like we still would. Like, my charges are from 13 years ago. And then when renting, my husband also went through addiction and has a felony charge. My husband and I couldn't find anyone to rent to us because we were both felons. His was 17 years old and mine was 13 years old, and they still wouldn't rent to us. So we actually ended up living apart a month and a half even after we got married so we could save money to buy a house. We had to buy a house because we couldn't find anyone to rent to us. And now we're both pastors and raising children and helping other women build their lives. But yet,
it's a narrative on the barriers. And so our key, I like to be in the solution, not the problem. So sure. The solution is for us to raise awareness to these employers that, yes, we do understand that there is real perceived risk in some of these situations, but let me show you how different programs from the state are working to help mitigate this risk and to give these individuals a second chance.
What someone thinks, believes, or feels about me is not my responsibility to own or really, I don't give it a second thought. It's really their loss completely, and I know that. And so I just don't really even think about it.
Now, but do we, those of us who are not, we have to deal with the stigma of understanding what you've been through and why?
Well, you know, I think as people in general, we're obligated to. Like, if you had one leg and you were walking on one leg, I would be compassionate towards that. I would be, you know, it's not my problem that you have one leg, but I would, you know, I might open the door for you or something. I just think if we're understanding and compassionate as people, it doesn't matter if it's drugs, you know, whatever it may be, it's just how we treat one another. And so, in my opinion, judgments need to go in all areas, you know, and then we would all be a whole lot better off. So that's just where I stand on.
And it all comes down to integration. See, the integrated nature of addiction keeps us bound. The integrated nature of recovery frees us. So when we go from one set of integrated principles to another set of integrated principles, and the principles we live by are, if I work on my vertical relationship, then all my horizontal relationships get better.
Yes.
So our goal is to precipitate and to perpetuate people being able to work on their horizontal relationship. That's the key to what we do. If we can't concentrate on that, then we're going to live in a stigma for the rest of our lives. You know, we get out of stigma because we are serious about it.
Yes.
Interesting.
Committed.
What do we need to be spending this money on to try to help people and get them working members of society?
I would think if we could just change our way of thinking as to giving, a hand up versus a hand out, because people are trying. They really are trying. And so I think if we can just think along those lines and then start creating affordable housing is probably one of the biggest things that I see for people in recovery who's rebuilding their lives. It is so hard for them. They're like Lindsay said, they're entering a job workforce at a very low pay. A lot of times you're talking about single parents of multiple kids. And if they work at all, their estate assistance is low to none. And it is very hard for them to afford anything. And so affordable housing is one of the biggest things I see over the entire Upper Cumberland area. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a huge, huge blessing in order to put money in that area.
People probably sharing what Rob was talking about, like if you're a business owner, you can get tax deductions for hiring people out of incarceration or with felonies, the surety bond, so you can give them a chance in those positions. If something goes missing, there's the surety bond for it. But actually giving people a chance, because all of us are successful because even when we did get turned down for houses or jobs, we kept going. We didn't let that stop us. But there is a lot of people that are brand new in their recovery that one rejection will stop them from continuing